It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Wednesday, January the 21st, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come to the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat with us for free premium content over at Extra Innings. Interact with the show, all at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Welcome to this special edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You might be just getting the crust out of your eyes, getting your day started, but you heard the news. Maybe you didn't. If you didn't, where are you? The Mets finally made their long-anticipated trade with the White Sox, getting Luis Robert Jr., Luis Angel Acuna going to the White Sox, a young pitching prospect, Truman Pauly, going over to the White Sox. And the Mets finally get their man, and it's interesting because it seems like we've been talking about this connection between the Mets and the White Sox forever. So, you know, what does this mean? Are the Mets done with Bellinger? Are they done on the offense? I'm not so sure on any of those fronts, but let's start with Luis Robert Jr. And I'm going to say this, and I know they're different players. One's a lefty, one's a righty, and I know one was homegrown, and I think you guys are going to get crazy, but it's not crazy. It's not unreasonable. With just some upside here. Now, it doesn't have to be a home run on this trade because there's some risk that Luis Robert Jr. could be the right-handed version of what they gave away with Pete Carl Armstrong. Think about it, the bat. Think about the profile, power, defense. And I know Armstrong is probably the best of the best, elite defense, but Roberts is very good. He may not even be as good as Tyrone Taylor, but he's got a good arm, range, and right now with Taylor and Roberts, you're in good hands in center field. But the Mets might have gotten a player that could do a lot of the things that Crow Armstrong does for the Cubs and what a lot of fans have smarted about since the Javier Baez trade. And, you know, that to me, when the run prevention narrative now has been weaponized against the Mets ever since the Bo Bichette signing, oh, look, they talked about run prevention and they're not doing that as if a bat is not important. The run prevention conversation, and again, it's proven that Stearns values up the middle defense. Robert Jr., Taylor in center, Simeon and his gold glove, or at least very high-level defense at this point in his career at second, Lindor at short, and of course, the arms behind the plate. And even if he's not, and I don't expect him to be 2023 Luis Robert Jr. That was the 38 home run guy. That's the home run version. Even if he's somewhere in between, and I think that that's where the Pete Carl Armstrong comparison comes. Because I think Pete Carl Armstrong is a little bit of an overrated hitter and a streaky hitter. And I anticipate, because if you look at the numbers last year, everybody talks about how great of a second half he had. He had 298, 126 runs created for Luis Robert Jr. It was all done leading up to the trade deadline in July. So keep that in mind. So Luis Robert Jr. Coming over, you know, maybe he could be even a version of Harrison Bader. Now, what the Mets did here and what they're showing you they did here is that they took Cohen's largesse, and they were able to, because the prospect haul with Acuna and the lottery ticket pitcher is not that painful. So if this is a bust, it's annoying, but it's not that painful. So basically, something happened where Chicago, over the last year, came down in their demands. You heard it was Mark Vientos at one point during the trade deadline talks. Because why wouldn't they make this deal? This is a better option, a higher upside option than Cedric Mullins. So it's kind of interesting. But it looks like basically the Mets said, okay, Steve, we're going to be on the hook potentially for 2 years if we pick up the option. You're already at about $330 and change on payroll. You're paying 110% tax. You bring in Robert Jr. It's a $20 million deal. That's not a bad baseline salary for what he could potentially provide, and Chicago took a lesser prospect package. Now, remember, and I know fans are going to talk about it. I'm sure they already are on X. I haven't seen it. Acuna's had a really good winter league, showing power, OPS over 900. Remember, it is winter baseball, so the competition is good, but it's not, might be triple A, double A. We don't know. I'm not a scout. I haven't been down there. But he's shown some progress in his game, and that probably allowed the Mets to finally say, hey, we're at a point where we still think, and I think this guy profiles as a backup. Yeah, you traded Max Scherzer during that summer. That was the summer where they traded Scherzer and Verlander and tried to get as much talent as they could. It might be that Ryan Clifford turns out to be the best of all these guys, you know, what he profiles with his bat, if he's still around. So you leveraged a hot winter league from Acuna. You got a player you've been chasing for a while. At the very least, you got a glove, righty power bat. You balanced out the lineup with the lefty. So you got Soto lefty, Robert Jr. righty. You have Bichette righty. At short, you have the switch hitter in Lindor. You have righty in Simeon. Polanco switch hitter. Righty's by the plate. So now the question, I guess, is coming up is, does this mean they're out on Bellinger? And I don't believe they are. Now, the part of this is that you have Carson Benj now as continuing to be lefty bat, continue to be talked about in left field. So that's still on the table. Now, how serious the Mets are, and are they, and the name Austin Hayes is still out there, where maybe he could come in and he can be that veteran caddy, platoon piece for Benj. That's certainly an option and a less expensive option, and they're still connected to him. But I still think they're putting their chips to the center of the table. You don't do what you did with Bo Bichette. You don't do what you did with Luis Roberts if you're retreating. One of the things that has happened this offseason is that we've taken Stearns' words and we've tried to create a linear line of what they're doing. And at times, especially during the inactivity of December, you were thinking, well, maybe because they see what the Dodgers are doing, maybe that they like their young players. They're finally they got a top five farm system. Maybe they want to start incorporating some of these cost controlled kids into the mix. But now, with the way that they pursued Kyle Tucker, the reports that they wanted Tucker and they wanted Bichette, you have to think that this is a chips to the center of the table situation. That Cohen, and it was talked about by Joel Sherman recently in one of his columns, he's been a constant bridesmaid to the Dodgers, lost out in buying the Dodgers to the equity group, lost out on Trevor Bauer, lost out on Yamamoto, lost out on Tucker. I mean, there's a little bit of a bridesmaid syndrome here, but Cohen's probably saying, hey, screw this. Baseball is a weighted lottery. It's a tournament sport. We still have a good foundation. There's still good players out there. Kyle Tucker's not end-all, be-all. Let's just blow past this tax. Yeah, I'm going to lose some money. We don't know what the CBA is going to be. Just make sure it's high AAV, short-term, so that we don't stretch ourselves out for a decade and hurt ourselves when in 29 and 2030, when Lindor's late prime or maybe in a different space as a player, and maybe Soto's opts out, and maybe we have prospects that are better than what we currently have on the roster, that we're not locked in. So I still think they're in on Bellinger. And if you think about it, with Roberts as a righty bat and Bellinger coming in as a lefty bat to play the corners, he was never somebody they were targeting to play center field. All of a sudden, you have a really interesting, balanced lineup on offense, very good defense up and down. And, you know, you laugh about run prevention. I mean, Bo Bichette going from short to third, it's not exactly a stretch. A-Rod did it. I don't remember anybody complaining about it when he did it for the Yankees. When Correa, before the failed physical, was going to do it, nobody complained about it. I understand those were elite gloves at short, and everybody assumes, well, your elite glove at short, you can play anywhere. Good assumption. But still, when you change a position, you change a position. So, basically, at this point, I'm not so convinced that Bellinger's out. Now, I think they're hedging their bets because who the hell knows what's going on with Boris. Boris has been playing chicken with the Yankees. It's very Pete Alonso-esque. Same playbook, same blueprint. He claims there's two other teams. I've saw some rumblings that maybe the Phillies are involved, and you have to think they might be because they were involved on Bo Bichette. They probably still are smarting about how that thing went down. We know they are. Dave Dombrowski was talking about it. There was a video out there. He was talking about it. I don't know if it was on with a podcast or whatever he was doing. So it is interesting that this could be the hedge. You get yourself your defensive power bat with reasonable projections. He can be in that Harrison Bader, Pete Crow Armstrong bandwidth as the type of player. I know the Pete Crow Armstrong one is going to drive people nuts. But he could be Harrison Bader. He could be that. And he has tremendous upside. So if the lottery ticket part of his game, where he's a 40 home run bat, all of a sudden it's like, wow, the Mets are banking on their coaches and their coaches making an impact. That's been something that was the foundation of the entire offseason that's not talked about as much. And I know it's a hard thing to wrap your head around because it's coaches are coaches. And I've been the one to say, temper the coaching being this Midas touch. It's the magician, not the wand, but it helps having the right support system. So I'm not so sure they're out on Bellinger. And then the other thing you have to consider why they wouldn't be out on Bellinger, you have these Freddy Peralta, Tarek Skubal sweepstakes, and I know Skubal's not reality, but you're hearing more and more about how this arbitration case and this $32 million number that Boris put out there is really... We knew Skubal was leaving at some point, but the thought I had was that the price is so high and the Tigers have no motivation because they're a contender to get rid of him. Earliest the trade deadline, and why not go for it and get some prospect capital? But now you're hearing some things that are different, that the Tigers realize that they really need to do something here because this guy's not coming back. And then there's Freddy Peralta. Are the Mets willing, something that I didn't think they were willing to do, something that it makes me nervous on a rental, clearing out their farm system, going for it with the Skubal Peralta trade, bringing in Bellinger? You know, Peralta, from a financial standpoint, is only making $8 million, is a less of a hit on the payroll that's skyrocketing and looks to be, if you did something like Bellinger in a trade from one of those guys, you're well over $400 million this year. Now, you're not going to be like that for 5 years, but for the next couple of years, you're going to be banged on tax, and who the hell knows what the new CBA is. You're hearing that the owners are lockstep, a group of them, in knocking out the 27 season if they have to, and beyond. So maybe Cohen's like, hey, let's just go for it. Let's put ourselves in a position that whatever the CBA looks like, we have the largesse now. Let's have a foundation of largesse, because what are they going to do? Just tell us to rip apart players and steal them from us? Who knows? You never know. So what's interesting now is that a winter that has vacillated from hand-wringing over the homegrown players like Lolanzo and the love affair with Diaz, that was a lot of the conversation. That's been put into the closet. The wild Kyle Tucker sweepstakes, which in between, and they sandwiched in between a thought process that even I talked about, which was, are they not taking necessarily a step back, but are they willing to incorporate these young players into prominent roles, cost-effective, knowing how strong the Dodgers are, knowing how important a farm system is, that let's just do it. Let's get this, rip the Band-Aid off. You have this top five farm system. But then you start to look at the behavior since the Kyle Tucker and the reports of Kyle Tucker and Bichette. And you're saying to yourself, well, that's not the case. Because they're probably looking at it as, hey, the Dodgers are doubling down. The Dodgers are going to DEFCON 1 on their, you know, leveraging this run. Why should we just sit back and let them have it? Let's double down on our end and try to get to the point where we are at the foundation, where in 5 years, we're the Dodgers, which is what they want to do. And that's maybe where they start to say, hey, the prospects, even though I love A.J. Ewing, I love Carson Bench, how close are they, Jet Williams, you know, whatever it may be, Jonah Tong, when they're ready and when they're polished, Lindor's in late prime and maybe on the way out. Who knows if Soto's still feeling this whole thing. He might want to opt out and get another big deal. We need to make sure that we support these guys in prime. You know, Lindor-type players don't grow on trees. Soto-type players don't grow on trees. When you're comparing a guy like Soto to Aaron and Mantle offensively, Maris, whatever it may be, they don't grow on trees. And when you have two top 10 position players in your lineup, that don't grow on trees. So maybe we've misread that. Maybe I've misread that. Maybe Stearns is willing, not all of them, to trade, incorporate some of the young players, but a top five farm system, they're going to look to use that capital maybe to put their chips against the Dodgers. Say, okay, you're good and you're established and you're tough, but I'm not just going away into the night. And that might be where the next 24 to 48 week with this whole Bellinger stuff, if they are able to land Bellinger, that might be where you're really seeing this go. And then the watch would be, can they land the big ace using their prospect capital? We'll see. By the time this gets to air and you're listening, it might be a moot point. Maybe that Bellinger goes back to the Yankees or somewhere else for a long-term deal. Maybe they go more moderate with Benjamin Hayes. But that doesn't preclude them from still going out there and doing something big on the pitching, which is still part of this. I don't think they would just sign Bellinger and run with the staff. I think there is an upgrade via trade or free agency. But I think free agency, it's going to be a simpler situation with Valdez and a short-term high AAV deal, and you hear nothing connected to something down the line. It's always been nothing with a Gallen or a Giolito. It's always been trading for Peralta or Skubal, Framber Valdez. That's all that's been connected. Now, with the Mets, you just never know. You just never know what else is out there because they move in stealth. Bo Bichette was a stealth move. They talked about him early November with his agent at the GM meetings. Nobody heard about that. There was some speculation. We threw it out there, but it was like, it's not a fit. He's a second baseman. They got Simeon. No one thought about third. And I don't like to start doing that whole thing where let's move this guy here to these crazy out of the realm positions. But then, you know, that was part of that. Phillies were going to do that. So anyway, that's my reaction to Robert Jr. I have a little bit of skepticism. The guy has been bad for 2 years offensively. There's some makeup things that I don't like to really get into, but makeup issues that, you know, potentially could stunt whatever his ceiling of potential is. Those are all speculation. Until we see the guy in person and watch him day in and day out, there's nothing that you really want to get too involved in on that. And but it's a move that I don't think has to have everything fall in place for him to be a valuable, productive member of the team. And the price isn't that big. I wasn't into giving up a Mauricio Vientos, but I'm okay with an Acuna and a lottery ticket arm. Harvard kid, good fastball, plus fastball, has work to do on his secondary pitches, and you know, lacks command and control. That kid, even though he's a college kid, he's a couple of years away. Mets are not going to not do a deal for Luis Robert Jr. over a lottery ticket pitcher out of Harvard. So that's that. Hope everybody enjoyed this reaction episode to the Talking Mets podcast. You know, more to come. Of course, you could check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, and come join me at the new and improved talkingmetspodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content at extra innings, all for the price of a cup of coffee a month, and get in touch with me, interact with the show, updates on the show, all at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Wednesday. We're on Bellinger Watch. We'll see where our next interaction is. Till then, take care, everybody.